Welcome to Life Sciences and Science Life, a science podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sport Sciences.
Our team of PhD candidates, along with various experts in the field, talk about current advances in science while exploring the challenges and triumphs of PhD life. Welcome to another episode. Our guest today is Katarina from the Department of Nutritional Sciences. Katarina, tell us a little bit about your background.
So I'm originally coming from medicine. I graduated in 2021. And after my medical degree, I decided to actually stick a bit with studying and carried on with a public health study. There I found kind of my love for research and especially for epidemiology. That's where I actually started now my PhD.
Wow, that's very, very amazing what you did there. Regarding your PhD in the Nutritional Sciences Department, can you give us a little bit of an overview of what you're doing?
Of course. So my project is all about plant-based diets and their effect on the human health. This is especially interesting nowadays because we have data that says that plant-based diets are becoming increasingly popular worldwide. One example for that is the European Smart Protein Project that could show that 5% of Europeans identify themselves as vegetarians and even 3% as vegans.
Katarina, what are the reasons for this trend?
So the reasons for this trend are very diverse and they range from ethical convictions, for example, animal rights, to positive effects on the environment, over to health benefits. And regarding health benefits, we know already that plant-based diets can significantly reduce the risk of chronic diseases such as type 2 diabetes. This was actually a project I worked on quite recently, but also cancer as well as cardiovascular diseases.
Wow, all of that sounds really, really interesting. But I have a question. Can you step back a little bit and give our listeners a little bit of a definition of what are all those concepts like veganism, vegetarianism?
Yes, of course. So overall in our studies, we are defining people into different dietary patterns. So we have, for example, the omnivores. Those are people who are not cutting any kind of foods out of their diet. So they kind of eating everything. And then we have pescatarians. Pescatarians cut meat products, but they still eat shellfish, seafood, or also fish. And then we have vegetarians. So vegetarians eat no food made out of animals, but still eat animal products such as milk or also eggs. And then we also have the vegans, and those are the group who are eating no animal products at all. So they're not eating any meat, any fish, any dairy products, or also no eggs.
But what about plant-based? What does it really mean?
So yeah, with the term plant-based, it's a bit more confusing, actually. So even this term is now used for kind of over 20 years. There is no universally agreed definition on it. Some researchers are referring to omnivore diets with a low content of animal source foods. Others refer to vegetarian and vegan diets, and even others only speak about vegan diets.
Okay, that sounds great, but let's dive deeper into the topic. Tell us more about how your research works.
Of course. So overall, I'm kind of taking two different approaches on my data analysis. So on one hand, I'm analyzing already collected data from a cohort called UK Biobank. In this cohort, there are over 500,000 individuals and they all have detailed dietary records. And on the other hand, my research group and I are setting up our own cohort called CoPlant, which is short for Cohort on Plant-Based Diets. And together with seven other study centers in Germany, we aim to recruit around 6,000 participants within the next 3 years, whereby one quarter of those participants should follow an omnivore diet, one quarter a pescatarian diet, one quarter a vegan diet, and one quarter a vegetarian diet. And within the whole recruitment process, we then collect data on their dietary habits, also data on their body composition, physical activity, sustainability. We collect biomarkers and also bone quality.
Oh, so there is a lot of people involved in this project. What do you think makes it so relevant for so many people? Why do you think this research field is so important?
So as I already mentioned in the beginning, we can see a clear trend, even worldwide, that people are defining themselves as vegetarian or vegans. And traditionally, especially in the Western cuisine, we have loads of meat in our kitchen. Therefore, it's interesting to get a closer look on how this trend affects the human health in a positive but also in a negative way. So especially when it comes to vulnerable groups such as infants, also children or breastfeeding women, or also elderly people, we can see there a huge lack of data. And also this noticed already different nutritional societies such as the German one, who cannot give clear recommendations because there is just not enough research done in this area. So we don't really know if following a plant-based diet puts them on risk for malnutrition or on a risk for different diseases which are coming with a lack of nutritional intake. And even if there is a higher risk, we still cannot give clear recommendations which supplements are needed for those groups for sufficient intake. However, we can definitely say is in terms of environmental health, plant-based diets can show a clear positive effect. So we have to really be aware that around 25% of our greenhouse gas emissions are due to food production, and more of half of those emissions are coming from animal products, especially meat like beef.
Wow, that's a lot of statistics, but thank you so much for the information. That's very, very amazing. Let's say I want to follow a plant-based diet. What is the key nutrition that I should follow, and what alternative food should I incorporate in my meal plan?
First of all, I think it's always useful if someone wants to start with a vegan or vegetarian diet, or even want to replace some of the animal products with plant products, to speak with a registered dietitian or a doctor who is also specialized in nutrition. And in Austria, for example, we can find a list of vegan-friendly doctors online, so I would look there. And also, I definitely would recommend yearly checkups, just to check the blood test and have a look if your nutrition status is sufficient. Of course, there are some potential critical nutrients that come with plant-based diets. I think the most well-known one is vitamin B12. So vegans cannot ensure their vitamin B12 supply. It is necessary definitely for vegans to take vitamin B12 supplements. Other nutrients, especially breastfeeding and pregnant women, should have a look at are iron or iodine. But this is not only for vegans, this is also for omnivore people.
When we think about vegan or vegetarian diets, there are a lot of myths around out there about it. So could you share some of those myths with us, and what is your opinion about them?
Yes, of course. I think there are a lot of myths out there. And I think the one I heard the most about is that a sufficient protein intake cannot be met with a vegan diet. But my opinion is that that's definitely not the truth. So if we just step back and think that an adult needs around 0.8 gram of protein per day per kilogram. If you're above 65 years, it's a bit more, with 1 gram per kilogram per day. So if we calculate that, a grown up person with around 75 kilogram would need 60 gram proteins per day. And if we then think about plant-based foods, which are rich in proteins, we have, for example, chickpeas, which come with 20 gram proteins per 100 gram. Or we also have quinoa, which would come with 15 gram per 100 gram protein. Lentils have quite a high content with 25 gram per 100 gram of protein. So I think if we just have that in mind, it would be definitely possible to meet this 60 gram protein per day. I mean, I'm totally aware that it's not as easy as for omnivores. Maybe you don't have to think about it that if you're following an omnivore diet, that you get enough protein. But if you're being a bit aware of it, it's definitely possible to meet your daily recommendations. Another very controversial discussed topic for vegans is the vegan diet for children. And to be honest, I will not really go into much details within this discussion, because as I already mentioned, we just cannot say whether we can recommend it or not. There's just not enough data available in this regard.
So this is fascinating. But you're not including children into the CoPlant study, no?
So at the moment we are not, but we definitely plan to, at maybe some point, at least try to incorporate those groups as well.
So how would you sum up, or what are the takeaway messages from your research, and what is your goal with your data? And in general, I'm very curious, how does the work of an epidemiologist look like in everyday life?
There are kind of two different sides to it. First, as I said, like just analyzing the data, which is already there. But secondly, also collecting new data. So we're seeing patients, then analyzing them, doing some ultrasound scans, doing some blood tests.
Wow, that's a lot. And that's very interesting.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Sounds like a lot of
work. And fascinating work.
Yes.
Yeah. It is. I really enjoy it at the moment. So it feels like it's in between only working with patients or only working with data. So
Right.
I really enjoy it. And also kind of our takeaway message is that we don't want to people to kind of convert from omnivores to vegans or vegetarians. We don't want to force anyone to change anything, but I think it would be really important to be more mindful about the consumption of animal products. Also, we definitely can recommend to incorporate more plant-based foods into our diets, also for our own health, but also for the environment. And definitely the aim of the whole study is to investigate if there are other key nutritions which have not been thought about when it comes to plant-based diets, and if people following a vegan or vegetarian diet are at the higher risk for a specific disease such as osteoporosis or hypothyroidism, and if they're on a high risk, what dietary recommendations should we give them? So if someone is interested from our listeners to participate in our study, we would be really happy if you can contact us on coplant@meatonly.ac.at, or you can just Google Coplant and I think you find a lot of information there.
Thank you so much, Katarina. Coplant, just for our listeners, is Coplant. And I heard a lot of those myths before, like vegans or vegetarians cannot reach their protein intake. So it's really good that we tackle that in this episode today. So thank you so much for all that information. Now I would like to ask you a little bit about your everyday life as a PhD student, because you do a lot, actually, like a lot of work. And I imagine that that comes with a lot of stress, and we need to have some coping mechanisms for that. What are yours? What are your tips for surviving a PhD? What is your stress coping mechanism? What does work for you?
Really good question. I'm sure that I cannot say that I'm totally stress-free, but at least I try. So I think especially also at the beginning in my medical degree, I had bad times where I just felt, okay, I just have to study. And there I noticed it's really just important to take time for yourself. I know it sounds really simple, and I think it's also already well known, but I think your personal state of mind is really affecting your studies and work a lot. So
yeah, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. And I just want to highlight that it's always important to put yourself also first and your mental well-being first. And just to have a look which kind of coping mechanisms are working for you, because I guess that's also quite diverse for everyone. In my case, just sports worked a lot. Mm-hmm. So I really like to incorporate sports into my weekly routine.
What kind of sports?
Yeah. So at the moment, I think I'm climbing a lot. That helps me definitely.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm.
It's really, I don't know, I really like to just switch off my head and just think about how to climb up there.
Yeah, it helps a lot. I do it as well. So it's really, really calm. Like, it's not calming, but it helps you. Like, you have to be concentrated into get there. So you don't have to think about anything else. So it really helps with forgetting about stuff in the lab and so on.
Absolutely. And I think also you really have to be at the moment, present, because there's also this risk factor of injuring yourself.
Yes, for sure.
That's definitely what. And also,
so do you have also other coping mechanisms except climbing?
No, that's quite specific. Definitely also doing something creative helps me. Mm-hmm. Like recently I got into doing pottery, and also I recommend, especially I think when you're in research, you have a lot of other friends who, or other colleagues who are actually having the same problems or having, or at least feeling maybe the same stress, and talking to them or talking to friends, family about it also, I think, or at least helped for me a lot.
Thank you so much for this interview, Katharina. It was really interesting to get some insights into your work and also how you cope with the PhD life. So see you next time.
Thank you really much for having me.
That's it for this episode of Life Sciences and Science Life. We are your hosts, Sarah
and Agnes. Tune in next month for more intriguing science topics, relatable PhD experiences, and experts' contributions on how to navigate the career path of a young scientist.
The next episode would be about PhD afterlife with Agnes.
This is a podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional, and Sport Sciences.
Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn.
Thank you for listening. See you next time. Thank you.